B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the man talking in your backswing, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, we're going to get to do something I've been meaning to do and wanting to do for a long time, and that's dive into the top public golf courses in the area. Chris Beeman, who runs the website B-Man's Guide to Golf in Charlotte, that's golf.bman.com, golf.bman.com, has written an article for charlotteagenda.com ranking the top 10, and we'll cover them all and some that didn't make the list as well. But we begin this week back home in the Lone Star State with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer as he's in Austin covering the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play Championship. Well, how is my home state treating you? Have you had some good barbecue or good Mexican food?
Good brisket sandwich, really good brisket sandwich last night. Some place called Slabs.
Yeah.
Food Network just came and featured. And it was really good. In fact, I might go back there tomorrow night to take it up to the room to watch basketball. Getting ready to go out and walk around. I was over at the municipal course they're trying to save here and this morning for a story. But getting ready to go out and watch and play some golf ball now.
Well, before we start talking about people playing golf, let's talk about that municipal story because you and I talked about this the other day. This is a big story in Texas, and I just keep thinking about all the courses that have been a part of Charlotte's golf history that closed down, and you know, we just lost Lark Haven. You know, they just, it seems they're going by the wayside, and Ben Crenshaw's gotten involved with this Lions Club municipal course in Austin where he learned to play and where Tom Kite learned to play. Talk about what's going on down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the it's a municipal golf course on the edge of downtown Austin, sort of west central Austin there, in a really good spot. And it is on land leased by the city from the university, and it's been that way for years. The Lions Club, as in like a Rotary Club, created it in 1924, and later on it went to the city. And so anyway, the university and the city have had this deal. Well, the lease is due to expire in May. They've got a one-year extension while they work through what to do with this. It's pretty valuable land worth, you know, in nine figures. And, you know, the most careful estimates started over $100 million for the land where it is. And anyway, they average about 60,000 rounds of golf there a year. They play the state 1A high school championships here. They've been playing the Firecracker Open, a big amateur event there on 4th of July for 60 years. I mean, it is at the heart and soul of public golf, not just in Austin, but in Texas. I mean, Crenshaw grew up three blocks from there, and he and Tom Kite played there. I mean, they got pictures on the wall of Hogan there and all this stuff. And it's beyond that and what it continues to be. I mean, a huge part of the golf scene in Austin. It's believed to be the golf course that had the first desegregation back in the 1950s when two African-American players decided to go play there one day. And at that point in time, you didn't do that. And someone called the mayor and asked the mayor what they should do. And he said, let them keep playing. And it became, you know, a big, important sort of monumental place because it, you know, it began to change the culture in golf and society there. And so that part of it is, you know, factors into the whole stew that this thing is. And you know, obviously golf people really want to get this thing saved. And if they can do it, and Crenshaw's already done a rendering of how he would come in and revitalize it, renovate it a little bit. Some of the holes he played, they're still there. There's three, maybe four holes that are still, all 18 he played are still there, but three or four of them have been reversed. They, where the tees were, the greens are now, and he wants to take them back to the way they were. Build a new clubhouse and a teaching area, and obviously turn it into something really good. I mean, it is, when I was out there on a Wednesday morning with the pine pollen flying, it was jam-packed. And one of those places where A guy in the clubhouse calls out your tee time over the loudspeaker, and you know,
that's
get
great.
Guys in their jeans and go over and tee off and go. And but it just, you know, it is such a big, vibrant place, and so we'll see where it goes. Obviously, it matters deeply to a lot of people here.
Has it been designated a historical landmark? Is that one strategy to save it?
Yes, it's a national historical landmark, and some publication that specializes in these things listed among the 11 most endangered national historic places in the country. So, you know, I know local politics being what they are, they have, I guess, in Austin, like 10 districts with representation. And, you know, if you're not in the right district, they think, hey, we could take that money that and put money toward other things. And there's a lot of strings being pulled in different directions. But I think, I don't know if they're optimistic they're going to save it, but they're certainly hopeful. And it's gotten a lot of attention. You know, you see the save, they call community, they save Muni signs around. So we'll see. You know, this time next year, they should probably have an answer.
Ron Green, Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. He's in Austin. You know, hearing that story reminded me of a conversation I had on the range at the Wells Fargo Championship last year with the guy who used to be the director of golf operation at Regents Park. And everyone who ever played that course, you remembered it was one of the nicest public facilities I think I'd ever seen. And he was telling me that he remembers going into a meeting with his supervisors at the end of a year. He said, and this had been like the fourth or fifth consecutive year that we hadn't just finished in the black. We'd finished in the black to the tune of between $500,000 and $800,000. And I walked in the meeting and they said, we're closing. And he said, what are you talking about? He said, we finished in the black. You know, look at all this money. They said, somebody's going to pay us $10 million right now to just get out. And, you know, it was one of those things he couldn't argue with it, you know?
Yeah, that's, you know, there are some realities. We know how money often wins. And they could, I'm sure if you're sitting there and you're not interested in golf, you could look at that land and see what could be done with it and see apartments and shopping centers and all that. But, you know, it's 140 acres of green space. Once it goes, you don't get it back.
Yep. Is it just the vibe of the town? I know Austin very, very well. Or is it the shots of the guys in their practice rounds and shorts? It just seems to me that for a big-time tournament, and this is a WGC event, there's just kind of a laid-back vibe to it. Or is that just the way it's coming across on TV?
Well, I think it's a different feeling event, and I think the format is part of it. I'm not a fan of the round-robin pot system they have. I understand totally why they do it, because they want to guarantee the top players all get three rounds. But I think it takes some of the – I mean, and under the old 64-player lose-and-go-home bracket, Wednesday was one of the best days of the golf season, because you just – you know, it was just like –
It was Thursday and Friday of March Madness, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think I heard Damon Hack on the Golf Channel saying, talking about the value of that. He goes, if Duke and Central Florida played and they were in a pod and they could still advance without winning that game, it changes everything. And I think it changes here. Now, I know if you lose your first-round match, only eight guys over the last 4 years have advanced out of their little pod by losing their first-round match, but I mean, it can be done. You know, there's been a lot of talk about what they could or should or may do with this thing, and I just think it, you know, it's, while it's produced some good champions, Bubba and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and Rory, I guess the last four, it's gotten maybe the ultimate answer, right? But I think getting there has lost a lot of some of the excitement, and I think, you know, the tour presented an idea to the players where they would play the round robin pod system for 3 days and then take maybe the top 16 or top 32 out of that and then play them 36 holes on stroke play on the weekend, which would not make it a match play championship, but the players pack up, nix that quickly. So there's still things being talked about. Paul Casey's on the pack has talked about maybe they changed the golf course a little bit, because the front nine here is on one side of the property and very different from the back nine. What we see is the back nine with the bridge and the water all the, you know, that's actually the front nine, the way the members play it. But Casey said maybe because all the hospitality venues are down there, maybe you set it up so you play nine holes twice. You just keep going through those holes. So the then the spectators and, you know, the corporate, the sponsor get their money's worth there, because, you know, the nature of match play, it's possible it doesn't go very far.
Right.
You get to the 14th hole and it's over. So I think there's all sorts of things. I mean, one of the guys who works for PGAtour.com has had this theory for a long time. They actually explained it to Jordan Spieth this week. Spieth said that may be the answer, where he takes the top 32 and they play in one bracket. And then you put 33 to 64 in the other bracket. If you're in the top, if you're 1 to 32, you win your first match on Wednesday. You get Thursday off. You go to Friday. Then the bottom bracket, 33 to 64, if you lose, you go home. If you win, you go to Thursday and play the losers from the top 32 matches. And then that gets you to Friday. And every successive round is reseeded so that the higher seed always plays the lowest possible seed. And that way you can, you're guaranteed to get 16 of the top players into Friday, and you might get 25 of them, and it works out easier. When you see it on paper, it makes a lot of sense. That's a good idea. But just going back to straight stand up and play and winner advances, loser goes home, I think would be just as good. But then I'm not Dell Technologies paying all that money to have the sponsorship for this.
Yeah, like you, I understand why they went to the round robin system and the pod system. But I, you know, this totally blows my next question out of the water. I just assumed, you know, they've had this venue locked in for several years now, and they've had this format locked into several years now. So I was under, I guess, a false assumption that everybody was just tickled pink with the whole thing.
Well, I think they like it here. You know, I've heard back and forth how much the members love it. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty cramped in the golf course getting in and around there. But it's great for television, and you know, when you're out there, it's really fun. I just think that the players, I mean, Rory said it, Casey said it, Spieth said it. If they had their choice, they'd rather loser. If you lose, you go home. I mean, you know, that's what one of the guys was saying. Said, you know, once I've lost, I feel like, you know, why am I still around here? So, and it creates Friday. This year they've changed it a little bit so that they have predetermined tee times Wednesday and Thursday in the first two rounds, but they have not set the tee times for Friday so they could make sure they get matches that matter on for the television window, because the fact of the matter is there's a lot of matches on Friday that guys are just playing because, you know, they're here and neither one of them is going to advance.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. You and I were out at Quail Hollow earlier this week. I think people who are looking around at their golf courses seeing dormant brown and mud that's dried and cake. Trust me when I tell you that Quail Hollow does not look like that. And it looked like they could host the tournament tomorrow. It's just in magnificent condition. But in having a conversation with Gary Soba, the tournament director, and we'll have him on next week to talk about this further. And I wanted to ask you about it because you see it more week in, week out. Is it just this first year of getting used to this schedule that is causing the players to wait really until the last minute to commit to playing in some of these tournaments? Are they just really feeling their way around, or is this going to be a new paradigm?
I think some of them are waiting. I think Gary Soba has a very good idea of who's playing at Quail Hollow. They just don't want to officially announce it yet. I think it's going to be a very, very good field. You're not going to get all of them. But I think they'll be very happy with who they get. And, yeah, I think players are probably a little more reluctant to go ahead and commit early right now just because, it is a little different. Guys are finding their way a little bit, like particularly pre-major championship weeks, what they want to do. I mean, they wind up with, Ricky Fowler's playing next week at Valero. Jordan Spieth playing there. Adam Scott, I think, is playing there. But they've got some players who, you know, it's not a total. There was a lot of concern that they weren't going to get any top players, but I think they turned out a little bit better than they might have imagined. And so some guys then start spacing it out. You know, Quail falling sort of in the 2 weeks after the Masters, or the third week after the Masters, and then there'll be more time before the PGA Championship. It looks like a great spot. I mean, I think you can, you know Rory's coming. He's already basically talked about that, and I'm sure you're going to see all the Justin Thomases and Phil Mickelsons and Ricky Fowlers, and I would expect Tiger and Phil are there. And, that would be, it's going to be really, I think, a pretty top-heavy tournament, which is encouraging.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Touched on this a little bit on the show last week. And thank you for bringing up Phil Mickelson. Ron, he has a pattern in his life of always looking for an edge, whether he needed it or not. And he has at various times been associated with some very sketchy individuals who do some very sketchy things. His name has now been associated with this scandal of paying to get your kids into school. When, if you look on paper, his kid was a valedictorian. She didn't need that kind of help. At some point, is Phil in real trouble of getting this reputation of he might be a sketchy person too?
I don't know that I would say that. I think Phil, Phil's a unique character. Jim Furyk was telling stories about him earlier this week. He's known him forever. And just, Phil's always been a little different. He's been a little, very self-confident. And, there's been some instances that have, hey, there's Phil's name again tied to this. Yeah, I don't know the college thing. That's a strange – I'm still trying to get my head around that whole thing. That is one of the most unusual stories I can recall. But, I haven't even heard, other than the statement, Phil hadn't even talked about it and hadn't even been asked about it much. But I think he is just a guy who has his own unique way of going about things. And, he sees the world through a little different lens than a lot of us. I mean, good grief, he's on Twitter now and doing videos about why he has such big calves and all sorts of stuff.
Yes, he gave good foot exercises to build your calves this last week.
And, he's just, that's part of Phil. I mean, most people really like him. Some people probably are turned off by him a little bit, but he has been great for golf and great for us in the media. I mean, he's one of the true characters the game has had, and the longer he's been around, the more you sort of get the colorful Phil character, because you really don't know, from day to day, week to week, what you're going to get from Phil. Something new might show up. I mean, whether it was the long sleeve shirts or whatever, it's just, he's 48 years old. He's not going to be out here forever. I think we appreciate him. Sure. I'm sure there are some moments he's like, oh, geez, I got to explain something else. But, I don't know enough about that part of it to say.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, we'll take Dead Aim at numbers 10 through 5 of the top public golf courses in the area, according to CharlotteAgenda.com and Chris Beeman. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Chris Beeman runs the website B-Man's Guide to Golf in Charlotte. That's golf.bman.com. And recently wrote an article ranking the top 10 public golf courses in the area for charlotteagenda.com. Chris, I got to tell you, I love this list. I don't think I've ever seen someone take the time to really go through, and I can tell that you've been to all these courses, you've played all these courses, your assessment of them is right on, and although you and I would probably disagree a little bit on the order, I think you got it right for the most part on your top 10 list. Let's start at number 10. And I think this is a very underrated golf club in the area. Talking about Redbridge out in Locust, and I think it's because it's out in Locust that a lot of people don't know it's there. You used a word just in describing some of the pin placements that can be there, diabolical, and I will use that word to describe a lot of the golf course if you play it all the way back. If I don't feel like I'm having a good ball striking time in my life, I'm staying away from Redbridge because that is a really, really good golf course. Don't you agree?
I do. It's definitely one of the more challenging ones on the list.
especially if you've never played it before.
I was going to bring that up. There's a par five. I don't know. Oh, God, I'm going to have trouble remembering the exact hole. But as I was looking at the yardage book, it looked like for my second shot, I could just go straight at the green, and there was just a green area below it that wouldn't be any problem. So I laced a 3-wood for my second shot. Well, this is going to be great, the base of the green. I get up there, and there's a ravine that I didn't know about. and I said, you know, if I'd have known this course in advance, if I'd have been with somebody with some local knowledge, that would have been very helpful. But I think you're very right.
Yeah, so you're probably talking about actually the 18th hole, which is one of the longest holes of any course on this list. It's over 600 yards from the back tee, and that one definitely has that ravine in front of an elevated green, which means that even if it's your third shot from 150 yards, it's going to feel like it's 175 because you've got to make that full carry.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. I think that is the toughest finishing hole anywhere in town, to be perfectly honest with you, in terms of public golf courses. And it's, if you have a 100-yard shot, if you're standing at the 100-yard marker, you better go ahead and add 20. And if the wind's in your face, you better go ahead and add 30, because that is an extremely elevated shot, and you almost seemingly never hit enough club.
Right. I think I've probably played that course 15 or 20 times over the past 10 years, and I've probably only hit the green in regulation, I don't know, 3-4 times.
But it feels like a birdie just getting there in regulation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I made birdie one time, and I felt like I had just won the Masters.
Yeah, those greens are really good, too. They've got mini Verde, and they can really crank up the speed. It's a really nice putting course. And not only that, I'll go ahead and put a plug in for them now. I've worked with them several times in terms of tournament play, organizing tournaments and having charity tournaments out there, and those people bend over backwards for you. So if you're looking for an event at a golf course you haven't been to before, I highly would recommend Redbridge. All right, speaking of bridges, number 9 is sort of a home game for me since I live out there. Talking about Stonebridge out at the border of Monroe and Mineral Springs, I think maybe with Old Sycamore, maybe and Charlotte National, maybe are they the last of the bent grass greens in terms of public golf in the area?
Well, so you missed Charlotte National converted theirs to Bermuda last summer.
I couldn't remember if they changed or not.
Yeah. So on my list, Stonebridge and then Edgewater right above it, which we'll talk about next, those are the only two left with bent grass on that list.
Sister courses, both owned by Wingate now.
Yeah.
People ask me all the time since I live out there about Stonebridge, and I can take or leave a lot of the front nine. It's just okay. But where it really is a great golf course is, to me, starting with the par 4, short 13th, dogleg ride uphill, into the par 5, 14th, the par 3, 15th, the great short par 4, 16th, the 17th is a par 3 over water, and the 18th is a fantastic risk-reward par 5. And those holes more than make up for any deficiencies in the rest of the golf course, in my opinion.
That's right, and you kind of covered the gist of my review of that and why I put it on the list, because of that closing stretch. That 14 through 18 is really exhilarating. You've got the lake right in the middle of 14, 15, 16, you mentioned the carryover water on really the last three holes, 16, 17, 18, all have water in play on your final approach shots. And it's just a fun challenge, right? And it's picturesque, right? I think I mentioned in my review that you can be in the fairway on the 14th and be looking across the pond to the 15th hole, the 16th hole. And it's just really cool when you've got those spots on a golf course where you can see so so many different holes and really just enjoy kind of the beauty of the course.
Yeah, some people get tied up in signature holes. I like signature areas, and that is a signature area on that golf course, very similar to a signature area we'll get to in Marshville a little bit later on. Chris Beeman, the B-Man's Guide to Golf in Charlotte, golf.bman.com, and we're talking about an article he's written for charlotteagenda.com on the top 10 public golf courses in the area. You mentioned it briefly. Let's move on to number 8, sister course of Stonebridge, and that's Edgewater and Lancaster. And I happen to feel that this is one of the great, best-kept secrets of golf in the area. You get on that golf course, and all of a sudden you get some amazing elevation change that's really unexpected for Lancaster. Is it just me?
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I think that's a unique feature that a lot of the courses on this list have, is that elevation change, almost a feeling like sometimes you're on a mountain course, because that's not something that you get if you're playing a city course or just one of the more metro area courses. So that is a neat feature. Changes your shot yardages, your viewpoints on a lot of holes, and so it's a fun challenge that you don't get around town a lot.
Yeah, I think it's well worth the drive to head out to Edgewater to experience it if you haven't. And if you experience it once, I guarantee you'll come back and play it. Agree?
I agree. And I think I mentioned in my review, since it is a little bit down there in Lancaster, I would say make a day of it. Play 36. I did that one 4th of July when I had off from work and just played 36 holes down there. But there's a couple other courses you could play on your way back into town, but that one's definitely one that you want to make the time to make that trip and go check it out, because it is unique for the Charlotte area courses, and it's usually kept in great shape. It's one of the two courses on this list that still has bent grass greens, so if you're not one of those that reads or plays Bermuda greens very well, you can kind of get back to a good bent grass course.
Okay, we're going to hop in a plane and, as the crow flies, go all the way to Concord for number 7. And that's Rocky River Golf Club. I'd always driven past this golf course on the way to the track, but had never played it until my son had a couple of junior events there. And this is a really neat golf course with a couple of neat features. I know that's Charlotte's home course. I think it's the second or third hole is a par 5 with a big old boulder in the middle of the fairway that I think is a great touch.
That's right. That's number 3. And, you know, I always tell people, hey, when I'm standing on that tee, I just aim for the boulder because I never hit what I'm aiming for anyway. and then I usually go to one side or the other. But I actually have seen someone, a playing partner of mine, who hit the ball farther than I do, and he actually hit the top of that boulder and down into the fairway, where he only had 150 yards for his third or second shot on a par 5. So that was, you can play that hole a lot of different ways, but that is a very signature piece on that course.
And again, another course with a lot of elevation change.
A lot of elevation change, a lot of kind of target shots where you kind of need to know where to go, where some of the shorter holes are dog legs, where they have hazards to keep in mind, or maybe some risk-reward decisions to make. So it's a fun, challenging course. And then it also feels like a resort course. So we've got one resort course here in the Charlotte area that's truly a resort course. That's Ballantyne. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But Rocky River is essentially like a resort course because it's got a sister relationship with the Embassy Suites there that's in Concord, that has a spa, has a hotel. Of course, you're right next to the Concord Mills Mall and the racetrack. So that one feels like it was built to be more of a resort course. So you get more of the amenities there than you might at just a golf club.
Chris Beeman has written an article for charlotteagenda.com on the top 10 public golf courses. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. At number 6 is a club that I really wanted to talk to you about because I played it before they changed the greens up, and it was really the greens they had in there, the bent, were in really rough shape. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on Warrior Golf Club now that they've made the switch to Bermuda.
Yeah, so that was something that I had actually talked to the general manager of that course about them doing that last year to try and address not only the greens, but then also just the playability of the course. And so they poured a lot of money and effort and time into really bringing that course kind of into the 21st century a little bit and really make it playable for all ages. And they've done that. The reviews that I've heard, so I haven't been there since they redid the greens in late summer last year, but I'm going to get back very soon. But the reviews that I've heard from folks on my site has been that it's really worked out well, meaning they improved drainage, they cut down some of the trees to give the greens more sunlight and more airflow, and that's just ended up making the course much more playable. So there's not as many penal areas where you can lose good shots potentially, or they're not going to have those problems later in the season with the greens and rough shakes. So they've made a lot of great improvements. It was already a great layout because it's sitting right there on Lake Wright. So it's got a lot of pretty holes, a lot of fun holes to play. And now they've got kind of the rest of the course up to par for that.
Yeah, it was one of those courses that, and there are several on this list that you look at, and some that aren't on this list, that when you're playing them, you sort of just look at them and you can see the layout is really, really good. And if you just go, God, if someone could just pump some money into this place, they'd have a really good golf course. And that is what I thought when I went around Warrior as well. One thing that did happen to me when I played that golf course, and this is the first time I'd been at a golf course where they have control of the golf carts somehow from the clubhouse, and if you veer a foot off of where they want you to be, the cart will literally shut down. And I got caught in the rough, and all of a sudden my kid and I are having to push the cart back beyond the certain point where it'll re-engage. I'm like, okay, guys, I promise I won't drive there anymore. It was really, really incredible. I'm not lying to you. It was a harrowing experience. That's Chris Beamon. And up next, more to come as we'll take Dead Aim at the top five and some honorable mentions when it comes to the top public golf courses in the Charlotte area, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And we now continue with the ranking of the top 10 public golf courses in the area, according to CharlotteAgenda.com and Chris Beamon. All right, Chris, let's move into the top five.
All right.
And to me, at number five on your list, I think it's perfectly placed. And I think, to me, this is the number one best-kept golf secret in town. It's in Union County out in Marshville, Eagle Chase Golf Club. I think it is a tremendous layout.
Yep, I agree. And I was reluctant to put it on the list only because I don't want everybody to know about it, and then it gets crowded and you can't play it, right? So so I agree. It's a great secret, but it's a great course. I mean, it's, like you said, it's out in kind of the farms of Union County, which means there's not a lot of civilization or houses or neighborhoods. There's none of that to intrude. So it's really just a golf course carved out of the beauty of the Union County countryside. And they've got several ponds and lakes. You mentioned, we were talking earlier about the finishing stretch at Stonebridge and kind of what a breathtaking view you have at certain spots there. Well, the stretch of 11, 12, 13, 14 at Eagle Chase is one of
exactly
the most beautiful stretches in public golf in Charlotte. And that's one where you've got the elevation changes, so you can be up high and see down below you, you know, four beautiful golf holes, a pond. You know, if you're playing late in the afternoon, you've got the sunset. So it's just a really beautiful course to play. So even if you're not playing well, hey, at least I'm playing a pretty course and I'm having a good time and I'm not working, right?
Absolutely. I always tell people who ask me where it is, I said, well, you go to Marshville and you take a left, and then about 2 miles past you saying, where the hell are we? That's where it is.
Yeah,
but another characteristic of Eagle Chase that it makes it unique in town is its zoysia greens. I've played on courses that it had zoysia fairways. I had never played at a place that had zoysia greens, and I was skeptical. But I've got to tell you, it's a really great, durable surface. And for the most part, their greens are in really good shape year-round.
That's right, and that's one of the key things, right, is we talked about so many of the public courses around town now have Bermuda greens because they had to switch over from bent grass that would just get beat up in the summer and not even be playable, right? They would get pockmarked. People wouldn't fix ball marks. They wouldn't repair very easily. But these diamond zoysia grass greens at Eagle Chase are generally immaculate, right? You might make a ball mark if it had rained the day before, but most days you probably won't, right? You can just stick one little divot tool in there for one mark, and that's it. I mean, they putt true, and you're right. They're able to keep them in that shape year-round, so there's never any periods where they're not in good shape.
Chris, number four on your list is one that people talk to me about all the time, and because I live in Union County, I just haven't made it up there to play, but I need to. A ton of money was dumped into Mooresville Golf Club a couple of years ago, and everybody tells me now that it is a must-play in the area.
That's right. This is one of those public courses that feels like they upgraded to a private country club. I mean, they really put a lot of time, a lot of money into it. They've got a huge clubhouse now. They redid the greens in Bermuda, and they made some other improvements to the layout to make it more playable. And I mean, it was already a very good municipal course that was well-loved by the locals, and now that's expanded to where word of mouth's getting out and people realize that, hey, this is I need to drive from wherever I am in Charlotte to go play this course. I even mentioned when they first reopened after the renovations, it was almost impossible to get a tee time. I mean, you had to reserve those tee times as far in advance as you could, 6 or 7 days, to get a tee time because everybody was playing it and the reviews were so good that it was just tough to get a spot.
The guy who did the renovation really specializes in renovations. Chris Spence did Rolling Hills Country Club, just did the redo at Providence Country Club. And, you know, he's one of these guys. And, you know, the original layout, the original nine were Donald Ross holes up there in Mooresville. And he's really good about respecting the past, but sort of updating it to the future. And so anytime I see Chris Spence's name associated with a renovation project, I know it's been done right.
Yep, I agree, and I've played it a handful of times, not a ton because I'm kind of on the other side of town like you, but I have played it a handful of times, and I really love kind of the way that the course sets up now. I mentioned the beautiful ninth hole in my review because you're playing right into the clubhouse in the background, and you've just got a beautiful view from that spot on the course. So there's lots of unique holes, and I think that was a characteristic of how I made this list, right? I wanted courses that had unique features to their layouts and kind of had that wow factor. And Mooresville now has that wow factor. Like I said, it plays like a private country club now as opposed to a municipal course like it used to be.
Chris Beeman has ranked the top 10 public courses in the area for CharlotteAgenda.com. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Time for the top three. You mentioned earlier, and this is the only true real resort course in the area, the golf club at Ballantyne. I have played it many, many times, always enjoyed it. I think that the thing that gets me is it seems to be shrouded in rumor more than anything else of is it going away anytime soon? I don't know. Every time I go to play, it's still there and it's still up and running and it's always in good shape.
It's funny you mentioned the rumors because I probably get asked that question 3 or 4 times a year when I mention it or when I'm talking about it with people. They say, isn't that going to 9 holes or aren't they closing that down? And every time I send an email to Woody Allen, the GM at the golf club at Ballantyne, he says, nope. Don't know where you heard that, but it's not true. So, I mean, yeah, it is expensive real estate, but, I mean, it's a package deal with that Ballantyne Hotel and Lodge there. So you can Get lots of play from out-of-towners that are having events like weddings, family reunions, things like that. And of course, it's a great spot for the larger kind of charity tournaments or celebrity tournaments that you might have. It's also got a very well-renowned golf school with lessons and clinics and things like that. So I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a favorite hole on that golf course, and I think, you know, it's I like several of them, but I think more than any, I've always enjoyed the par 4 18th. There's something about that just looks good to my eye. I like to draw the ball so I can start it out right and turn it over, and then you've got a pretty challenging second shot that's a forced carry, and it tends to play just a little bit longer than you think it does.
That's right, and you didn't mention the other aspect is that you've got all the hotel guests looking down
<That's right. laughs>
on you, so you've generally got an audience, and with that added spectator pressure as well. But, yes, there's a large bunker that runs along the right side with the water there as well, so you've got trouble either with water or sand if you're trying to hit the pin on the right side of the green. So it is a good challenge. And like I said, the fun aspect of it gets amped up when you've got spectators heckling you from above when you're trying to make that birdie putt.
Chris, your number two golf course, similar to Edgewater being out in Lancaster, a lot of people don't know about Carolina Lakes down in Indian Land out 501, but this has been a really top-notch golf course for a long time. A lot of big-time CGA events are held out there, and it's a very challenging layout.
Yeah, so that one's one that's got just a ton of amenities. It's built in a retirement community, and so they really put a lot of money into the clubhouse and the bistro that's there. That's kind of where you would have your 19 cold beverages and meals. They've got a huge practice area, so it's got all the amenities to go with a great layout that has very several memorable holes. I mentioned in my review that this one is probably what I consider to be the most bunkered course of all the public courses in Charlotte. I mean, there are tons of bunkers on every hole, including some of their signature holes, like the par 3 16th hole, long carryover water, and then you've got this murderer's row of greenside bunkers that you also have to carry to get to the green. So it's a very intimidating course on some of the holes, but it's fun, and it's a memorable layout.
Yeah, last time I played there, I got paired up with a guy who had – just come back from overseas serving our country, and we got to about the 16th, 17th hole. I said, well, man, what do you think? And he said, I didn't see this much sand in Afghanistan.
<There you go.
laughs> All right, Chris, it's time for number one. And oddly enough, when I mentioned I was having you on the show and what you had written, two people that I mentioned it to said, well, I bet number one has to be Verdict Ridge. And I cannot disagree. This is another one that a lot of people don't know about. It's up in Denver. I had never heard of it until my son played a conference tournament there when he first got on varsity when he was in eighth grade. And I fell in love with it. Now, it's not one that you can walk because it'll wear you out. And there's a lot of spaces between tee boxes and holes. But, oh, my gosh, beautiful elevation change, beautiful architecture and rock structure throughout. Just a really good challenge.
That's right. And, you know, for my number one course, it had to be one that had that wow factor to it. And if you play Verdict Ridge, you say wow to yourself a couple of times, just standing on the tee box on some of the holes. The elevation changes, like you mentioned, you know, I mentioned a few of these courses that play like mountain courses. Verdict Ridge has got to be a mountain course. So just the elevation change and the challenges that you get are just like playing up in Asheville or one of the mountain courses up there. And so part of it was the wow factor. Part of it was the challenge. So it's a very difficult course. And so I would say that kind of thing always challenges me to come back, right? I want to come back and say, oh, man, I can do better than that. I can rise up to this challenge. So a course like that is just fun to keep coming back to play to see if you can conquer those challenges that it has. And then the course is just kept in great shape. So it's kept up, and it's got the amenities like a private country club. And that's what pushed courses to the top of my list, where if they feel like a private course, if they make you feel like that, if the conditions are like that, if the amenities are like that, then that's got to be one of the best public courses in Charlotte.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say what really elevates it for me is when you're playing it, you feel as if you're playing a private golf course for sure. Chris Beeman, the article is on charlotteagenda.com. It's his top 10 public golf courses. I can't get you out of here without making an argument for two or three of these that you didn't have on your list. One that I'm really going to argue for, and two that other people would. Let's start with the one I would argue for. Old Sycamore Golf Plantation was not on your list. Is it because of the bent grass greens, or what sort of knocks that down for you?
Yep, so you kind of hit the nail on my head. With the courses that have bent grass around Charlotte still, they've really got to do a lot of extra work compared to the Bermuda courses to keep the greens in great shape year-round. And I think Old Sycamore was a victim of its own success, right? Getting more play meant having more damage to repair on the greens, people not fixing their ball marks. And so they just had gone through a couple of seasons where the greens have gotten to a point during the later summer where they're just not very playable. They're just not in great shape. And so that's the only thing. I would agree that the layout and the challenges of the course and even the amenities with the clubhouse, I mean, it is a semi-private course, so they do have memberships. That all would definitely put it on this list. I think just, there's a couple of courses that were in my honorable mention list that just had a few issues the last couple of seasons, and so I didn't put them on the list.
One that I'm going to bring up now is one that you tweeted out pictures of you actually playing, and I'm semi-partial to it because I think the tee markers are custom-made for me, Charlie Nance. They say CN, and that's Charlotte National. You mentioned that they had changed their greens. I know that they had built a clubhouse, and this is another one of those courses that, as I look at it, every time I'm out at Charlotte National, I go, God dang it, there's a really great layout here. If I ever won a lottery, I'd be so tempted to put some money into this place.
Right. It's always been kind of a no-frills course. Like you said, I mean, they just turned their trailer clubhouse into a real clubhouse a few years ago. And so, that's one that's near and dear to my heart. It's 5 minutes from my house. It's where I typically go to practice. It's got a great practice area for chipping and practicing out of a bunker. So I love to go there, and the staff is super friendly. They're very laid back, right? So if you show up as a single and you just want to go out and play, they'll put you on a hole where you can move around quickly and you won't get stuck behind larger groups. So it's a great place to play for more of a laid background to golf. As far as kind of the amenities or the conditions around the fairways and greens, like the rough or just the aesthetics, not always, A+. But like you said, I mean, there's a really great layout there that with a little love and, a little more maybe money and work put into it, that could be one of these top 10.
All right, Chris, get you out of here on this one. And this is one living out in Union County that I can hear people coming up to me this weekend saying, how come you didn't argue for Monroe Country Club? One of the oldest golf courses in town, the original nine holes, Donald Ross Golf Course. They have very, very slick Bermuda grass greens. My problem, and I'm not one to argue for Monroe, because my problem is half of the greens on the front nine, I think, are tricked up jokes, to be perfectly honest with you. But where would you stand on Monroe Country Club?
So I would say Monroe is probably, again, in that 2, 3, or 4 that were like right on the cusp of me putting on the list, right? So Stonebridge, Redbridge, right there towards the bottom half of my list. Monroe absolutely can go toe-to-toe with those courses from a golf perspective, right? Like you said, the greens are small and tricky, but they're usually kept in really good shape, so you can count on that. What I'll also say for Monroe Country Club is they've got a PGA Master instructor, Nick Jacoby, which is not something that many courses can say. I think there's only 150 of those PGA Master instructors in the nation. So he's one of them. So they've got a lot of good attributes. What I would say, my experience there is it feels like a locals club, meaning if you go there and try and get on or try and get a tee time, you're going to run into the local groups or the members that have their game, and so you kind of feel a little bit like an outsider. And so just from a friendliness and an amenity standpoint, it just didn't quite match up with some of the others on my list.
Yeah, and they have a lot to be desired in terms of practice facilities. Their range, when it's open, is very, very hard to get to, far away from the clubhouse. And it's their chipping area is in the middle of the golf course, and you never want to be down there. So I think that would be a strike against it as well.
Yeah, I've joked that I've never seen the driving range to a couple of folks. Well, I think you have to drive way out past the 10th hole to get to it.
Oh, yeah, and most of the time, especially after what happened, you know, in August, September this year, there were more pontoon boats on the driving range than golf balls being hit.
That's right.
His website is B-Man's Guide to Golf in Charlotte. That's golf.bman, bman.com. That's Chris Beeman. And I invite you to check out his article on the top 10 public golf courses in the area on charlotteagenda.com. Also, I'd like to thank Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for his time and insight from Austin this week. A reminder, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, articles on Rory being fed up with poor fan behavior, the pros' least favorite holes at Augusta National, and yeah, that's an anonymous survey for sure, and someone who's recreated number 12 at the National in their backyard. It is too cool. Hey, weather-wise, could we really have three straight weekends of perfect weather to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart? I think we do. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.